Yo everyone, welcome back to brand new Techish. I'm always doing the intro, next week you can do it, but I'm Michael
Behane. I literally did it last weekend, oh, yeah, thank you. Sharing the burden.
Michael Behane here with...
Abba Jesse, Osinsade, if we're using our surnames.
There's too many Michaels in this world, I have to specify who I am.
Of course.
Yeah, so cool, alright, brand new Techish, latest roundup, tech and pop culture news, let's go. Hey everyone, just want to say thank you to this week's sponsor, Owler. They're a communication platform for education. They are actually hiring for remote tech lead. So if you're good with Node.js and React, which is actually two programming languages that I use, feel free to apply. I've got the link in the show notes and let us know. It's a remote job, so you can work on a beach in Bali if you want and make that moolah.
Take me there.
And yeah, link in the show notes, Owler Education.
So let's start with a controversial BBC sport campaign that went live this week.
Yeah.
It featured a sprinter, a well-known black woman.
I don't know nothing about athletics, but there we go.
Anyway.
So basically there was a runner, it was an ad campaign.
Yes.
The ad campaign said, Slay in Your Lane, which
Slay
is also the name of a book that came out earlier in the year by two black girl authors. The whole book is called, it's basically the Black Girl's Bible. It's like a how-to survivor's guide for black women in London, basically, right?
Yes.
Or in the UK.
They coined this phrase in 2015 in reference to Solange Knowles.
Yeah. Well, that was the inspiration, they said.
That was like some of the inspiration, yeah. And then one of the authors, Yomi Adeguke, tweeted about the fact that she had contacted the BBC in pursuit of like the breach of copyright, because they've actually copyrighted the
right,
title.
Yeah.
Slay in
so
your
it's
lane.
A trademark dispute, in case everyone isn't following. Yeah,
exactly. As 4 days went by, the BBC had yet to reply.
Mm.
So she sent a tweet about it and immediately started being labeled a bully by one of the creative directors involved in the process, not to mention all the people on Twitter that wanted to give their two cents.
Yeah.
Saying, people were basically attacking her. What do you think about that? The fact that she, the victim, now becomes the aggressor, the mean person.
I mean, I'm not surprised, you know. I think, so to give more of the backstory, she released an article in The Guardian essentially saying that this is like a continuation of a long historical trend of essentially black creatives having their work stolen and their ideas and creativity just taken without credit and used by predominantly white institutions to serve their ends. So the fact that she mentioned race had a lot of people up in arms. Oh, well, you got to make it racial.
Why is everything racist?
I don't see color. What are you doing this? Like,
I'm colorblind.
You're aggressive. So it kind of, it's almost a cliche. Like they even, as in the response was a cliche. They start saying things that, essentially accusing of basically the angry black woman, essentially, right? So I wasn't surprised by any of it, really. I wasn't surprised by the fact that their shit got jacked. I wasn't surprised by the fact that people were angry at her reaction for being upset that, well, there's two co-authors, for both of them for being upset that their work had been infringed upon. But I love the fact that, you know, the UK Black Twitter kind of rallied behind her. There's a lot of lawyers apparently saying, I'll help you,
amazing,
you know, I'll waive all fees. Like, let's get you sorted. Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, came out and was like, I support the original Slay in Your Lane stand. Shout out to Sadiq. That's why I voted for you.
By the way, he used to be... the MP of my borough. So
oh, seriously?
While we're doing claims today, Sadiq Khan tooting. What's up?
You guys text each other and everything, yeah?
Yeah, you know, we're in a WhatsApp group.
So anyways, what's the grand lesson from all this? Like, is it beyond trademarking your stuff? That's what we got to say. They trademark their stuff, so now they have a...
Trademark is super important, especially if it's integral to your business.
Right.
Like, a lot of people, in my personal opinion, get too caught up with copywriting and trademarking, like,
early on. Yeah, that's true.
And pursue that ruthlessly before they've even built a product or gone to market. And it's
why
are you going to pour all that money into trademarking this idea that there's no market for? Like,
completely.
No one wants to pay you for. So I do feel like it's mindful to remember that. It's not always relevant to your business or even essential or necessary. But I do think it is just exhausting to see this happen again and again. There was a member of YSYS, Aji Ayarinde, who runs MIA, which is all about bringing African apparel and African designers.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I remember this.
To an international audience. And he was photographed wearing this really unique, literally custom tailor-made cord suit that later, was it ASOS?
I think it was Boohoo.
Boohoo.
Boohoo. So Boohoo is a retailer, a large like clothing retailer
fast
in the UK.
Fast fashion retailer where you can buy a dress for like $9.99,
literally.
Super cheap.
So they cloned this clothing.
Let's not question the supply chain because we don't want to know where that goes back to. But they basically copied the design almost exactly. And it's very unique design, really stands out. You know, pink and white stripes, yeah, floral print. And it's just, it's lazy. It's disgusting. It's not that it's not like it hasn't always happened. But I just think it's just tiring to just see it happening again, and like particularly to like marginalized groups. Why isn't anyone going out trying to copyright infringe Trump stuff?
But I think his brand's kind of tainted. But I get the
point.
But
you know what I'm saying? Like, come on now. Why is that? Go copyright infringe Warren Buffett or something.
No, because to be honest, what you've always taught me is always about like power dynamics. Mm. So you're not going to try and infringe somebody who's powerful and got a massive platform, successful and rich. You're going to try and infringe people who you think have got no voice.
Screw the little guy.
Like, when I was younger, I had my first company. It was like we'd sell like novelty gifts, and I would kind of start like making my own.
Yes.
And I would read up on these stories of people that would have their products just jacked by like Urban Outfitters. Like they would send their product to Urban Outfitters. They'd be like, oh, we don't want to sell it. Then all of a sudden they've got something similar.
Wow.
And it's like, and you can't do nothing as far as they're concerned.
Shady.
I think what's great about social media in 2019 is the fact that build your platform to kind of protect yourself.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Because if you didn't have this platform, if they didn't have that platform, nobody would have clocked. Nobody would have known. They couldn't. Yeah. They would have to talk to the press, and the press wouldn't really want to hear it anyway.
Yes.
Nobody wants to criticize the BBC because it's quite a beloved institution in the UK.
Yes.
But yeah, to me, it's all about trademark your stuff, build your platform, or at least have connections with people who have platforms so that when this doesn't happen to you, you have some
protection. Amplify that message.
Yes. Yeah. And
You're doing, and also just like anything to do with like big companies, big organizations, it's so difficult, like you say, for one person to mobilize against a huge organization because, you know, it is capitalism. And the more money you have, the more options you have, the more power you have. And that's not going anywhere. Yeah. And that's not changing. But at the same time, I think one can learn to also just, you know, do what one can to like protect oneself in the situation. So in this case, it's copyright infringement. If you're a freelancer or an employee or something, in your case, it's a contract. Before you sign that contract, are you scrutinizing it? Are you going over it with a fine-tooth comb? Are you basically preparing for the worst-case scenario? Mm. That's what the Stoics taught us to do, and not necessarily the same words, but I feel like you have to do that no matter what you're doing. If it is something you care about, whether it's a project at work, a personal thing, whatever type of content you're creating, you've got to be like, okay, what is the worst possible thing that could happen to this in the context of the environment I'm in, and then protect yourself against that.
Yeah. Apparently, Facebook's doing their own crypto.
ICO, Facebook ICO.
Facebook ICO, but it's going to be like pegged to like stable currency. Yeah, so it's not going to be a mad thing where guys
I
are
want
like,
them to pick like a random currency, like the Nigerian Naira.
Yeah, we want it to be stable. Thank you very much. We don't want inflation. I'm playing that movie. I'm messing with you. Nah, shout out to Nigeria. Anyways, so yeah, they're going to call it Global Coin. Very inventive name there. Nice. I would have preferred Zuckcoin. You know what I mean?
Zuckcoin. Zuck. Or the Litecoin.
Yeah, that's true. Litecoin. Bluecoin.
Bluecoin.
Election's been hacked coin. Anyway, so I mean, what do you think? You think it's a good strategy? You think it makes sense?
There was a time when like everything was like hot. Like hot. Crypto was hot.
Yeah.
That everyone was going to do one. Like Stripe did one, didn't they? Stripe made one a while back, maybe 2 years ago.
Thing did one. What was the messaging app? Telegram. You love Telegram, right? They had an ICO, yeah.
Love Telegram. I actually deleted it. But no shade on Telegram. Shout out to Telegram. Like, it's just another inbox.
Too much in it,
gives me unread message anxiety. Why? What's the motivation? Tell me more. Why are Facebook doing this?
That's a good question. Without being in the boardroom, it's hard to know. I think they're looking at what WeChat's done in Asia and China particularly, and they just see that, you know, WeChat is really dominant when it comes to transactions out there. Why they couldn't just use the dollar, I'm not sure. I guess perhaps if you've got an app that's in multiple countries across multiple territories, it's probably better just to have one currency.
Weird.
Yeah, I mean, this is me just like completely thinking outside the box. I could be completely wrong. And I think at the same time, maybe there is an element of crypto's hot and when they first started it. The other element is that I think, and this is me thinking super Machiavellian, there's a lot of power if Facebook has 2 billion users and a higher percentage of those users are using and trading in this global coin. that makes Facebook a real player in just on an economic level.
Gosh, Facebook as a state?
Yeah, a pseudo government almost.
A political state.
Yeah.
Is that the next thing? If we don't break big tech, can they just like break off into their own like planet, satellite planet, and then just form a nation? And then what tech company would you be a nation of?
Oh, that's a very difficult question, man. I guess initially you'd say Apple.
Spotify Nation!
Nah, forget Spotify,
it'd be
man.
Like a festival all day. Hey,
the
guys.
Music would be banging, though. The music would be hard.
Come
yeah.
on now.
I guess my instinct would be like Apple, because at least they're not like, they wouldn't spy on me when I'm in my
it'd
room,
be
kind
sick.
Of thing.
It's slick setup on that.
The furniture would be sick. Bare minimalist, like, thing. But, like, yeah, I think I wouldn't worry too much about Facebook setting up their own country or anything like that, just probably because what separates a nation state from a company is that the nation state has
responsibilities.
Not just that, but like,
oh, that was a joke.
Because you know what, like, if you look at in colonial history, a lot of countries were colonized by companies. So the East India Company, I think even Thailand, a lot of Asia was, other parts of Asia also.
Thailand never colonized.
Not Thailand, I was gonna say Thailand. There's a few other islands that are Dutch colonized, but they literally were just companies that would go there with their ships, and they were allowed to have they were allowed to have their own private mercenary armies. So now a company can't do that. So anyway, the point I'm making is that what separates...
Oh, companies do that. Halliburton.
That's true. No, but they are a private army for hire for the state, right? But so Apple can't hire Halliburton and say...
Oh, Halliburton aren't a private army, are they? They're just like did contracts. Oh, they have that arm as well.
They have
a
private army.
Oh, okay, damn.
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. Halliburton is the oil company.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of...
Fahrenheit 9/11.
There's another company. You're right. It's tip of my tongue, but it's a quite prominent that was used in Afghanistan.
Tip of your
right.
tongue. You used to be in it. Why are you lying? Michael's a trained mercenary, people. That's what you don't know.
I was that East Africa snitch. Everybody thought I was down. But anyways, the point I was making is that, yeah, so I wouldn't worry too much about Facebook having any, like, realistic ambitions to have a statehood, because, like, what separates a state from a company is that a state has a monopoly of violence. So a state is legitimately allowed to have an army. They're allowed to have police. The police can throw us and they can take the arm. You screw in your face. You don't think I'm talking facts?
I'm just saying that companies have monopolies of violence as well. How many employees at Apple have, like, committed suicide?
No, when I say monopoly of violence, I mean, if I say I'm not paying my taxes no more, eventually the police are going to show up at my yard and throw me in jail.
What happens if you don't pay for a product? I guess you're creditors.
The police can get me. The police get me for them. You see what I'm saying? Like,
I have to put this thought experiment on hold.
No, honestly,
I haven't thought it through.
Yeah, think about it. Come back to me. You know what I mean? But like in terms of there's other forms of power. So for example, if you're trying to break up Facebook, and all of a sudden Facebook can kind of get like everyone else's, they can shock the world market by like doing some shenanigans with their currency. It might make people think twice. Like, don't step to us. We can.
So you're seeing this as like an existential like support, right? It's like, okay, one more way to buy our existence into the future.
I don't know. I feel like it's probably good business, just based purely on the WeChat example I gave. But just thinking forward into the future, it does give them a level of leverage over the whole world.
I'm gonna make Techish coin.
Let's do it. Me and you trading our selling our own stuff to ourselves.
But you're saying like the leverage is conditional on people using it.
But I mean, they have such a high install base of 2 billion plus people. If like 10% of those people, 200 million people, are actively using this currency, that's bigger than most currencies outside of the dollar and you know the yen and the euro. Like, you're talking about a major. That's bigger than probably all the African currencies combined straight away. Do you see what I mean? I mean, it might have good impact. So for example, if you are underground, you're a farmer or a trader on the continent somewhere in Africa. Having a reputable currency that you can quickly just like, you know, do some stuff with. Although in Kenya, they've got M-Pesa and they're doing their stuff already.
But I see what you're saying. I mean, it feels weird.
Yeah.
Facebook making a play for financial inclusion. It feels weird. Like, I know that that is one of the big like drivers of support for cryptocurrency, this idea of financial inclusion. And I get that. And it is an important thing. But I'm just going to like, with all things Facebook do, just observe.
Yeah, let's watch this space. This was a story that actually had me dying. I wanted to talk about it a while ago, but I completely forgot.
Okay.
So Jessica Richmond, she is the founder of a company called Ubiome. They're kind of like a biotech company, health tech company. Anyways, her company has unfortunately fallen foul of some bad PR, primarily because of her. It turns out she's been going around lying about her age to everybody.
Uh-oh.
So like, she was trying to get into like all these like Forbes under 30, you know, 35 under 35.
Got it.
Turns out she was a big woman, 40 something plus.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just like, there was all these stories and just like.
Why did she lie? Free advertising?
listen, man, these lists are a big deal to a lot of people. That's and they're true. Great publicity. And
I'm still going for Forbes 20 under 20.
You could do it. Black don't crack. But like, I mean, let's keep it 100. Like, we all would have loved to have been on Forbes under 30. And end of the day, like, now we're past that time, that threshold. It's like, boy, like, you know, it's all done. And I was saying to you off mic, I was like, I blame Forbes for this kind of... Well, not they exacerbated this kind of...
Forbes.
I have blame... Hashtag blame Forbes, everybody.
They're making money.
They're making money, don't get twisted. But they're kind of like exacerbating this kind of ageism to the point now where you got big grown folk desperate to appear younger so that their achievements seem more impressive. You know, we've all grown up with the Mark Zuckerberg. He started Facebook when he was 12 or whatever it was.
But that ageism, we're ageist, and that happened way before for Forbes.
But I'm saying they've exacerbated it, though.
Did they? I don't know. I get a bit frustrated when people, like, throw the blame onto the opportunistic platforms or people or true ideas that effectively are just, like, tapping into elements that we are driving through our own human nature and our own characteristics. Ultimately, right. If we blame Forbes, then we as a society will never address the fact that we are obsessed with status. Like, why... People are like, oh, youth is wasted on the young. But the whole time you're young, people are trying to get you to grow up. People are like, oh, you gotta like... I mean, certainly in my household, my dad wanted me to like finish school early, go to college early, like go to work early, like because he could show off to his friends and be like, oh, she's so smart. Like she's, you know, only like 14, but she's doing the maths of like 16 years old, or she's only 18, but she's running like a 20-year-old. And I just kind of think we're just full of contradictions. And right. It's like... quite frustrating.
I don't know. I feel like it's a new thing where status was always super important, but I think this whole kind of idea of that you do everything super young is kind of relatively new. I know you said that you give that example with your family, for example, but generally speaking, tech has really popularized the idea of the young hacker.
Disagree.
Who makes a... No, I mean, like, for example...
Young doctors. There are people that have pushed their kids into medical school so that they can be operated on.
Right, but
on
that was... That wasn't... 18. They weren't on the front cover of magazines.
Read the autobiography of John Stuart Mill.
I'll check it out.
John Stuart Mill, he was a philosopher, helped invent utilitarianism. This is like over 100 years ago. He was like lauded for being like, you know, young guy into Oxford or Cambridge or whatever. So
okay, I feel you, but I just feel like from my perspective, I feel like it's been, when I look at, for example, Kevin Rose, the founder of Digg, he was on the front cover as like the youngest millionaire, 23 years old. Mark Zuckerberg, all these lists that do exist, I feel like... And I think if you ask a lot of millennials and Gen Z, they'll say, like, if I ain't got my ish together by 25, I must be a failure. Like, I almost laugh when I go on Twitter. People talk about over 25 Twitter. They're like, and it's basically a bunch of young kids who think that by the time you're over 25, you should be a millionaire with three kids and a mortgage. Like, and it's just like, I can't wait for reality to hit them.
Yeah.
But, it's, I guess.
I think that's capitalism. Maybe we blame capitalism then.
That's always the answer I hear, boy.
Because what's happening is this race to work less or make more, ultimately be more free, right? Free of the things that we want to be unburdened from. And in a way, it's a fallacy, right? It's a con. I used to also believe that I could be on six figures by the time I'm 30 because I thought that that was something that was accessible to all hardworking people, not especially all hardworking people in, you know, Western society globally recognized renowned degrees. I thought that that was like a realistic aspiration and I didn't realize that actually there are like all these other factors driving that, like how, you know, in demand is your skill set, is your role, how much supply is there for people like you,
the economy.
Social science graduates are a dime a dozen, you know, and I am one of them. So yeah, it's I personally don't see that changing because I feel like so much of that is also related to the human condition. Like the fact is like our brains are still developing when we're in our 20s and we don't have a sense of self that is driven from an inward place. We have a sense of self that's driven from an outward place. So we want to be on a Forbes list because that is our identity and that makes us feel more meaningful. As people get older, they care less and less about how they're perceived by other people and they care less and
apparently
less about
those
things.
Apparently not with this person in question. She wants to be, you know, a grown-ass person and pretend that she's in her 30s when she's actually 40-something.
But think of the advantage of that from a founder's perspective. So I've seen in forums where founders hire interns to like apply for every award and every grant and stuff so that they can get more press and publicity.
Absolutely.
Hey everyone, Abadesi here, one of the hosts of Techish Podcast. This is just a little shout out to tell you about our Patreon page. Starting from as little as $5 a month, you can turn your fandom into cashdom by supporting the Techish mission. Go onto patreon.com/techish and subscribe now. quite a troubling story in the news. I say I heard, I read it. I heard it in my own voice, in my head, as I read it with my eyes. So clarified. There is a multiplayer platform game called Roblox.
Right.
I'm looking at a picture of them right now. Interesting animations. Look like cardboard boxes, robots.
Mm.
So it's a very troubling story that I've heard. Really just want to share it as a kind of like cautionary tale about how young people and really anyone who's like vulnerable in our society is interacting with technology.
Mm.
So they have 90 million users worldwide.
Wow, I never even heard of it.
And they market at children. I know. That's like an unfathomable number.
We sound
to
so old right
like
now.
Like once we go beyond 10, I can't visualize it.
Yeah, it's
how
crazy.
How many people at this gig? I don't know, 3 trillion?
It's a nation.
anyway, so a mother was very like troubled to see the behavior of her preteen, so, you know, 12 or younger son, change quite markedly over a period of time in which he was playing with this game. She decided to investigate a bit further, and she found out that other players on the platform had encouraged her son to join a chat on a third-party app.
Mm-hmm.
And as she went through his messaging history, she realized that he'd been groomed into sending sexually explicit images of himself, which was, of course, extremely horrifying. So she assumed this very innocent game would be a safe place for her child to interact. She didn't think of the fact that people he would interact with there might encourage him to, whatever, join a Discord group or a Slack.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where it was that this was happening. But how does that make you feel, especially thinking about, you know, when you might be a parent one day, you've got nieces and nephews. Mm-hmm. Like, how does that make you feel as an adult about what we are exposing young people to?
It's a good question, really. I think it's just, I think my sister's got a few kids and I would just tell her, you know, you just don't think that you can just leave them to their own and just mess around with devices and it's all going to be all good. Like, there's a lot of monsters lurking. And I don't mean that in the game. I'm talking about real life monsters. And they're going to go to the places where you specifically think it's a safe haven for children.
Yeah.
I think I haven't had a games console in a long time. But when I did, and I'm going to age myself here, there wasn't a social component
Atari.
To it. No, I'm not that old. But not crack, but I'm not that old. It wasn't like a social component to games anymore. As at the time, you could just play your game and that was it. It wasn't connected to the internet. Whereas now, you could be chatting to your friends. You could be playing with a stranger. And so when you're letting your kids play these games, it could be any Tom, Dick, or Harry just chatting with your kid. And it might be a kid's game, but it might be a 40-year-old big man living on his own, some sick guy, you know what I'm saying?
So professional predators are out there using these platforms to find people.
Yeah, and they're smart. They think of ways like that we couldn't even fathom. I remember that story we talked about the YouTube comments and whatever, right? So child it shows how, like, these guys are like, they're like roaches. They can figure out the tech and all kinds of, you know, inventive ways to get a hold of children. And I'm just reminded of the fact that Steve Jobs and a lot of these tech leaders don't let their kids have devices. They just don't. Like, they're getting a burner phone. Like, they're rocking around like they're a drug dealer. It's basic. Mm-mm. Old school Nokia 3210. Like, yeah, possible. Honestly. Like,
mine's getting walkie-talkie.
Trust me. Mine's getting pigeons, you know? Bird carriers.
Over.
But you know what? Like, the funny thing is, I saw one thing about how there was a certain schools in the UK that were not letting kids bring their mobile phones in, like, to the thing. And when I saw that story, I was like, yeah, of course. Because obviously, when I was younger, there was no just, like, people had phones, but it was very few and far between.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, why has your kid got a phone in school? Like, why? Really and truly, why do they need it? Like, come on. Do you know what I mean? Like, do they need to be hollered at, like, every 5? Is it a symptom of how parents now are, like, helicopter parents, where they always want to know if their kid's all right,
Yeah, definitely.
Because I used to leave my mom, and she wouldn't see me until 5 o'clock. And she wouldn't know, like, what I was up to the whole day. You'd be like, how's your day? Yeah, I didn't need to text you for the whole day saying, like, English was good.
Well, what's interesting about that, I did some work with a school, School 21 in Stratford. They're really cool, East London. And someone there was saying how it's the parents that are forcing the phones onto the kids, not the other way around.
Yeah,
exactly like you said.
Yeah.
So even when teachers like, we got to take their phones away, the parents are like, no, I want it. It's weird.
Yeah, there's a book called The Coddling of the American Mind. I haven't read it, but I'm familiar with the author. And he talks about, there's a great book that I read called Anti-Fragile. And the concept of Anti-Fragile is,
that's the guy that wrote The Black
Swan. Yeah, Nassim Taleb.
Yeah.
So the concept of Anti-Fragile is there are some things that gain from volatility. So there's some things that are fragile, like a glass in a box, shake it, it'll break. and there's things that are stable. Shake it, it won't break. And then there are things that if you shake it, it gets better. And human beings are one of those things. We are anti-fragile. If you go to the gym, you break down your muscles, you become stronger, right? And children are anti-fragile. If you protect them so much, you are not letting them develop.
Interesting.
You see what I'm saying? And there's a, and we kind of are coddling children. If you think you need to speak to your child every day, every minute of the day, and need to know if they're all right. Maybe who knows? Once I have a kid, I'm gonna be the opposite.
Yeah, Michael, like,
where
be
are
like,
you now? Where
I haven't spoken to you in 2 minutes. You have like Find My Friends on.
Yeah, trust me. I don't know. It's difficult. Yeah, maybe as a parent, I shouldn't be speaking too much on it. But it just feels like to me, like, I mean, we just did a 180 because first we said parents watch your kids on these platforms, and now we're saying don't watch your kids. But what I'm saying is like.
Understand the risks,
and also watch out for these devices. These devices shouldn't be with your kids, because you're not. That's when you absolutely can't. You're saying give my kid this device, not realizing that's probably the biggest risk that you're putting to your child.
Technology isn't apparent, is it?
Yeah,
I spent
not.
A lot of my early years watching TV. I don't recommend it.
You turned out okay.
I turned out okay, yeah, because then I like did like a whole like anti-technology revolt in like adolescence, and then like so, but that was like self-inflicted or enforced rather, because I was just like, nah, I gotta like wise up a bit, sharpen up. Also, because I moved to Africa where there was like one channel, so I had no choice. I was like,
hey, why
TV.
Are you embarrassing Africa? Like, people, people listen to this podcast who have never been to Africa. Tell them that it's amazing with 1,000 channels.
Of all, I will name the specific country. I moved to Tanzania. Okay. And secondly, it was 1995, so there was like limited options.
All right, cool.
But I guess like the final thing I just like add on this is, I think we might be moving to a society where we really need to give kids a bit more credit for understanding like the risks and the dangers in society.
So quick random story. I was actually gonna go to the cinema, right? And I ran into a celebrity. Well, the person isn't a celebrity by anyone's estimation, but they're a celebrity to me.
Okay.
So I grew up as a big Michael Jackson fan.
Okay.
So I saw
my god.
What do you think I'm gonna
Back
go
from
with?
The flesh, hologram.
No. That's a whole other story. I'd be on CNN right now. No, so basically, I saw a documentary years ago of the person who taught Michael Jackson the moonwalk. Right.
Wow.
It's a dude called Jeffrey Daniels. He's actually in the Bad video as well.
How do you know this?
I used to be a proper big Michael Jackson fan. This is what I'm saying to you. That's why I was so hurt by the whole documentary and I was so conflicted.
And you're named after him, right?
So anyways, I'm going to the cinema now. I see, who do I see sitting down? The person was mad familiar. And I was just like, yo, like, I'm a big fan of your work. He looked at me. He couldn't believe that he was recognized.
Really?
Yeah. As I brought my girlfriend over, I was like, do you know who this man is? Do you know who this man is?
You made his day.
I was like, do you know who this man is? I said, this is the man that taught MJ the moonwalk. It would have been so embarrassing if I was wrong, but thankfully I was right. And he was like, thank you. And I just tapped him up. I said, listen, I don't want to take up too much of your time. God bless, have a great day.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? And he went off to watch his film, whatever, right? And I just give the flowers to people while they're still here, man.
Wow, like, big up.
Like, as an MJ fan growing up, that is actually like probably like I'd have to meet like the Obamas or Jay-Z for me to get more gas by a person. I think about this person.
What if you met Janet Jackson?
I hope this guy higher than Janet Jackson.
What?
Taught MJ the moonwalk. Are you nuts?
Yeah, but that was just one move.
That's the greatest move of all time. Anyways, okay. I digress. Anyways, give your flowers to people while they can still smell them. That's the parable of the story.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. I like that. What flowers you give him? Spike Lee, She's Gotta Have It, adapted for Netflix, back for season 2.
Right.
Season 1, I actually put off watching it for a while because I think I saw the first few minutes of like the first episode. I was like, nah. But then I just like ran out of shows with black people on them on Netflix. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, you know, we all go through that feeling. People of color know what I'm talking about. Like, I need to watch something I can relate to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I was like, okay, I'm going to watch She's Gotta Have It. But season 2 has come out to quite some furore.
You want to explain?
Oh, do I want to explain?
Yeah, explain.
So there's one particular scene in which Nola, the protagonist, so she is absolutely stunning, black American woman, like living in New York, she's an artist, she is exploring her polyamorous life,
right.
Sexual identity, etc. And this is a big part of the show.
Yeah.
And in this particular scene, which is problematic, she's having a conversation with a British man, black British man, about the experiences of like black Americans versus black British. And he's talking about why like black British people always get given roles in America.
Right.
And how they're often like played for preferred. All. Yeah, preferred. Yeah. And like, there's one particular phrase which he talks about. So this was a clip that was recorded and kind of went viral on Twitter, where he talks about how black British actors are freed of the burden of slavery and lynching and all this kind of stuff, which means that they can play roles differently, which caused a lot of upset and anger.
And so then you're black and British. Then she said, oh, you guys have like Stockholm syndrome, as in you love your oppressors, yes. Right? So that's why you just forgot, basically, whatever. I mean...
So you're black British. You tell me, how did that make you feel? How's your Stockholm syndrome
going? I definitely don't love my oppressor. That's for damn sure. I would say that...
You wouldn't kiss the queen?
No, I wouldn't.
Open mouth?
I was the one that said I wouldn't take an MBE, man. You lot was the one that was like, I'll take it any minute. I'll bow down.
Just, I know when that invite comes, you want to be my plus one. And
I'll be
like,
no, I won't be. Why I won't be. I'll be there in the tracksuit. I'll be there in the tracksuit in the back. Just, anyways.
I let you come in.
So anyways... in all seriousness, it's a very complicated issue because I do feel like black Americans do have genuine grievances in terms of the fact that I feel like black British actors do seem to be preferred for certain roles, primarily because A, they're probably a bit cheaper, B, there's this kind of classism regarding a British accent, and C, there's this kind of, not myth, but there's this trope that there's classical training here, therefore, you know, we are better. And you can debate the merits of all of those things. Some people fall on different sides and say, oh, it's... Black British actors are better. They are classically trained.
Maybe there's just bias. Maybe casting directors like that a black guy walks in with the British accent and they're like,
yes,
ooh,
exactly.
As opposed to being
yeah.
like, oh, sub.
Yeah, yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, oh.
Yeah. So it's a classism. It's like a mixture of classism and racism because it's talking about two black people, but the British accent carries with it that kind of, you know, is seen as more upper class, whatever, right? But I feel like where they went too far was this whole thing about Stockholm syndrome. End of the day, like black British people, we are descendants of either people from African countries or Caribbean countries. And we have our own, you know, either colonial history or slavery in the Caribbean. Mm. So it's like, Spike Lee just got it wrong as far as I'm concerned. I don't see how you can rationalize, you know, those statements about, you know, Stockholm syndrome. So, but... Yeah, anyway, the macro point is the second season of She's Got Habit is absolute rubbish. I think Spike Lee should have focused on that. Like,
it was even her hotness couldn't save it. Even not to objectify women, because yeah. She's also, you know, a good actress.
Very talented also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not the acting that's bad. It's just the fact that the show is poorly written. It's very cheesy.
Lame.
I don't find the characters that likable, to be honest. All of the characters... And
timely point to mention the fact that it's just come out that Netflix is increasing their subscription fee in the UK
from
£7.99 to £8.99.
I think in the US though it's $9 already though, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's like currency
free, yeah.
You know, differences.
Yeah.
Are you thinking? Still worth it?
I think it's still just about worth it. I think it gets to the. I think Netflix does have a bit of like, what's the technical term? Price elasticity, where they can still go up a little bit. I think once you start going into like double digits. That's where people are like...
Questioning.
Yeah, that's when they're going to question it. Especially now when there's going to be other streaming services coming out, like we talked about with the Disney thing. But yeah, Spike Lee, man. Watch this space. Netflix, watch this space in terms of price rises. So are you big into streetwear? Like, do you F of streetwear?
Hello, look at me.
That's why I asked.
Burn!
So apparently...
Burn. Yeah, I own that Supreme brick, actually.
Ah,
that limited
there we
edition
go.
Supreme brick.
10 Gs, yeah.
I put it on my head every now and then, just to balance walking.
It is crazy, isn't it, when you look at that kind of stuff. But anyways, the point I'm making is that, like, there is a new company who's coming out. They're going to do elite streetwear. They're
actually
a really trendy company. When you think of, like, sexiness, you think of this company. They go by the name Amazon. I make myself laugh, even if I don't make anybody else laugh. So basically, Amazon is apparently cooking up their own line of streetwear. They're going to collab with like influencers and they're going to like do these limited edition drops. And after 30 days, it's going to be gone.
Yeah.
So they're replicating the Supreme model. How do you feel about this? Do you think Amazon has got can pull this off?
Come on now. Look, I love Amazon. I work there. I held shares there. Don't anymore. Full disclosure. Too broke. Truthfully, I just think I see quite a lot of attempts by Amazon to like position themselves as a cool brand.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just stop.
Nah,
you know
fam.
What I mean? Like,
yeah.
You don't need to be cool. Like, leave that to actual streetwear. You know what I mean? Like, you're
right.
not going to be Stussy. You're not going to be Vans. Like, you're not going to be recognized for your edge, okay? Right, yeah. You're going to be recognized for your competitive pricing and efficient delivery
that's
chain.
That's what I want.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
That's why I love you. That's why you're sexy. So, like, I have actually bought clothes on Amazon, and it's like, I'm ashamed to admit. This man!
Shade. I'm joking, carry on.
I put my sunglasses on, because this shade is strong. But I would never admit to it, right? Mm. Like, I was like Converse or like Doc Martens, like, you know, things that you buy on the high street, but you have Amazon credit or like it's like cheaper
there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, okay, the name is kind of cool, The Drop. Mm-hmm. But like, it's probably going to be some like vanilla influencers. It's not going to be like anyone edgy that I'm interested in or I care about. I mean, I hardly any really know any influencers, to be honest, but you know, pretending that I did. What about you? You're going to be there. You're going to like queue online, set a reminder, 9 a.m.
I'm a grumpy old guy, so even when it comes to these genuine street brands with these drops, I look upon it like kids these days, like honestly, yeah. With my walking stick, like why are you queuing up for some any clothing? Like,
why do all shoes look like pediatric shoes? Can we talk, like honestly, while we are talking about streetwear, can we address this? Okay, I know I'm in my 30s, but still, why does everything look like you got it from a foot doctor? Like how you're correcting a back condition. Why do your shoes look like this?
I don't know. That's fashion, isn't it? Gotta let the kids be the kids, isn't it? But like, Amazon, if they made this into like a sub brand where you didn't know it was Amazon, but it had the Amazon efficiency with the Amazon capital. So let's say they were able to get the biggest influencers and cut them a check and be like, come do your own line, we'll manufacture it for you under the website thedrop.com. Then it could work, right? So Amazon, listen, I'm giving free strategy out here. Amazon, just pay me.
Do you know what? Like,
because even you looked at me and you were like, that's a damn good idea, Michael. Because you're like, damn smart.
There's no way anything cool can live on the Amazon platform.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried navigating Amazon Prime?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
The video. What is up with that UI?
It's horrible.
Like, yo, Amazon, like, you need to be comfortable with breaking away from the fold. Now, I remember, like, if you actually look at how the Amazon homepage has changed since Amazon's inception, it's very little.
Correct.
Because they put so much thought into, like, okay,
optimization.
Mouse is hanging here, optimization, etc. But it's just, like, even just, I don't know, you know, like, you are limited by your design.
Yep.
Always. And what's amazing about streetwear, you know, fashion in general, think of window dressing, the art of window dressing, you know what I mean? Like, people have been practicing this for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
As soon as you go to like New Bond Street here in London, where all the luxury brands are, suddenly there's only two mannequins in the window.
Yeah.
You walk in, there's only five items in the whole store. And you're like, wow, it's like being in an art gallery. Shopping for fashion on Amazon is like showing up at a jumble sale.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, wow, okay, here's like a random collection of stuff that doesn't even go together and I can price it high to low or low star five. So I don't know. Look, I love you, Amazon, but I don't love you for your design aesthetic in street.
Yeah. I feel like if they, just going back on the whole strategy, if they were to partner with influencers, separate domain, and then tell them, listen, on your Instagram, just put like thedrop.com/EverettTaylor.com/whoever, right?
You know what we need
to do? Go on.
We need to be like, hey, here's an idea, and then cut in, sponsor our Patreon. For further access to idea.
This is
for Amazon.
I was confused. Oh, you mean,
for us. So you're like, oh, here's another idea. And then that's the point where we intercept. And we're like, to hear the rest of this sentence.
I can't do that to the people. I've got to give them these gems for free, man. Come on, man.
Yo, I'm the business half. Subscribe.
Thanks for listening, everyone. That brings this week's Techish to a close. I'm Michael and
Abadesi here. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode, to subscribe, share it with a friend, review us on iTunes. 5 stars, no pressure. Guess what? Did you know that we have a Patreon?
I did know.
Well, we've only got 5 patrons so far, but we want to reach 15 by summer and buy ourselves a rum cocktail. So maybe that'll be you.
Yeah, please do. Ciao. Catch you next week.